here at Vinyl Community Podcasts, we strongly encourage you to use protection for your pleasure. Talking about sleeving your records, inner sleeves, outer sleeves, your listening pleasure, get your mind out of the gutter. Now, stay tuned to Vinyl Community Podcasts.
Yo, buddies. What's going on? It's Concert Buddy. Welcome back to Vinyl Community Podcasts. I've got something a little different in that this is a pod exclusive, pod only presentation. Something I wanted to kind of put my hands in. It's going to be a kind of a shorter show, only in the sense of it's not going to be an hour, 45 minutes. We'll see how far this goes, but topic at hand is Discogs, and we've talked about it in many different ways, forms and fashions here on the podcast and here on the podcast feed with our other contributors, but I've noticed something that's kind of piqued my interest here in the last, call it 2 weeks, and I didn't really feel like doing a formal live stream or, you know, we've been kind of out of rotation on our Surface Noise presentation for a myriad of reasons, and we're not going to get into that here, but the long and the short of it is Discogs is obviously an essential toolkit for today's record collector. I like to kind of joke, and there's some truth in the joke, that it's the best, worst thing that's happened to the hobby. But of late, I've noticed the CEO, Kevin Lewandowski, and COO, Lloyd Starr, kind of going around on YouTube, and they've sat down with a couple of really good interviewers. Steve Westman, I think, a couple weeks ago was the first I saw. And then a little over a week ago, it was with G.I. Sanders over at NTX Vinyl. I have to say it's slow because I always seem to mess that up. And they were both interesting conversations, but I was also kind of wondering the motivation behind them, because as best I could tell from watching both videos, I didn't really glean any kind of immediate information. It was a lot of talk about the analytics behind the company and the future of the company and the price increase or the cost increase, which we'll talk about here in a second. So in other words, it's kind of like old news. So I was expecting from these videos maybe or these interviews that there would be some kind of new news, if that kind of makes sense. So I kind of got my head scratching. And then I watched a video about a week ago from Tom over at High Rant District YouTube channel. I know Tom sometimes is not the biggest fan of what we do here on the podcast, but I appreciate his candor, and it's always good to view things a lot of times from a different viewpoint. And he made a video that I was really, really interested in called The Vinyl Community as a Marketing Tool, featuring Discogs. And he made a lot of salient points about Discogs kind of, for lack of a better word, leaning into the vinyl community to kind of promote their product in these interviews. And he's not wrong if you take that kind of approach. But let's rewind it a little bit and just kind of go into where Discogs has gone, what I personally use Discogs for, and all that kind of stuff. So if you're looking at the broader scope, the longer landscape, I mean, Discogs has been around since 2000. So you're talking now going on 24 years of serving the vinyl community and record collectors at large as a database to house our collections, and probably more importantly to their business model as a marketplace. And it was started, obviously, I kind of talked about it before, about CEO Kevin Lewandowski started it. He used to be, I think, a programmer or a developer at Intel. And if you want to hear the backstory, that's not really kind of when I'm getting into it, but just kind of setting the stage. So if you collect records in any way, shape, or form, now I'm sure that you've hopefully heard of Discogs. If not, surprise. There's this thing called Discogs out there that a lot of record collectors use. And with the advent of, you know, these 79th organ, I call it, cell phones, now you can literally take the app and take it with you in record shows, shops, wherever you go to look up things. I was actually at a record show this morning and was using it to cross-reference titles I had versus titles I was considering purchasing. So it's a very valuable piece of the collector's toolkit. But it's not perfect. And I think both Kevin and Lloyd Starr would probably admit that. But that's not me being negative. That's just pointing out the obvious, right? I think to say that it was a perfect vehicle for record collectors would be naive. But you can't deny that its influence on the community and the hobby, it's huge. I mean, here's some stats for you. So the average collection size of a contributor to Discogs is 200 items. Okay. The median collection size is a lot less, 20 items. The largest Discogs collection, 634,000 items. My guess is probably that's a store or a dedicated seller, but I don't have that right in front of me. The smallest Discogs collection currently is one item, and I'm sure that's a lot of different people. Maybe some scammer accounts. We'll get into that in a second. The average collection value of a Discogs user is $320.25. Don't want to leave out the 25 cents. Not surprisingly, the most collected artist on Discogs is the Beatles, with close to 5 million, 4.7 million pieces collected. The most collected master release is Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, and almost 600,000 pieces collected. The most collected release is, this one's kind of surprising, 2006 Daft Punk's Random Access Memories at 68,000 pieces collected. And the most expensive release in the collection on the site, in the database, is the Black Album, the infamous Black Album by Prince, at an average of $27,500. Pretty wild stuff. Now, I say all that because the elephant in the room is that Discogs is kind of the big Pumbaa out there. I mean, you can factor in eBay in terms of a marketplace too. eBay is still a big, big player in the vinyl collecting space. But there are over, at Discogs, 750 million records in the global collection. So you have a enterprise that is part marketplace, part database, user-provided database, obviously. I mean, that is an astronomical number that the community has built up this database to that scale. It's unreal. But it's also mind-blowing to me that there hasn't really been a solid number two competitor kind of come up. And part of this reason I wanted to talk about this topic now in this way is that recently there was, I wouldn't say viable, but there was an option out there. It was this website called NASDisc. And I know, speaking of G.I. Sanders at NTX Vinyl, I know I actually purchased a record from him off of NASDiscs, but NASDisc closed their site here in the last, I think, 2 months. And so it's kind of almost given Discogs kind of a walk-off lead in terms of any true competition in the marketplace. Years ago, there used to be an option that I used to like, and I thought it might have promise because it was kind of nestled into a larger site. And I'm talking about Reverb.com. They had an LP or a record kind of offshoot of their website called Reverb LP. It's great. I really enjoyed it. It needed some, you know, fine tuning, like a lot of databases and websites do. But I had a lot of success selling and buying records on there. But again, I guess the business model wasn't strong enough to kind of sustain. And so Reverb.com, which usually sells like instruments, stereo equipment, DJ equipment, all kinds of stuff. Check it out if you're not familiar. I guess they just decided to kind of shutter that division of the website. So really, Discogs, I mean, outside of eBay, Discogs is kind of it when it comes to the scale, the size, the mammoth marketplace and database. Because I think a lot of people that collect records in the hobby can relate that Discogs is an invaluable tool when it comes to the database piece, because there's nothing like it. And that's kind of the novelty of it, is that users provide all this information. Users have basically stimulated the entire database. Now, obviously, the people at Discogs have the back-end support, IT support, the oversight. They have, I think they have less than 200 people that work in Oregon at Discogs. I think last count I saw was 164. I think that's pretty specific. So I'm sure it's probably gone up or down. I do see sometimes that they are hiring at Discogs, but generally it's for programming and kind of IT specific roles. Not roles that I think can make it better, and we'll kind of get into that. But anyway, kind of meandering here. So Kevin and Lloyd have been on this kind of interview circuit with first Westman and now G.I. Sanders, just kind of talking about their business, the history, things they're working on. And I think a lot of this, because the timing is really interesting, because I think a lot of this may be fueled by almost a year ago. We're talking May of 23. Two big things happened at Discogs. The first thing was Lloyd Starr joins Discogs as the COO. He leaves Vinyl Me Please, where he was the president and COO, to become the CEO of Discogs. Okay, cool. So that was effective May 1st of last year, 2023. And then less than, call it literally 3 weeks later, on 5/22, May 22nd, came kind of the first big, let's call it, let's say tidal wave, big wave. And again, I don't know if Lloyd was involved in this decision. I think it was probably well in the planning stages at that point. But Discogs then changed their selling fee. It went from 8%, and 8% was only assessed on the selling item price, meaning whatever the final sell price of an item was. So shipping charges were not factored in. So they changed it in two ways. They made it 9%, and the 9% applied to both the final selling and shipping cost fee. Now, shipping costs are going up. There's a lot of heartburn in that area with media mail prices rising and that kind of stuff in the hobby. So that's something that sellers cannot really organically control. Now, watching some of these interviews that Kevin and Lloyd have been a part of here with Steve and G.I. Sanders, you know, they kind of talked about, you know, there were people kind of circumventing some of these fees by they would sell something, and this is an example, sell something for $1, but then charge a $37 shipping fee to then only have to pay 8% on $1. Okay, that was an example that was given, or a similar example. Personally, as an active user of the database, the website, the app, all that stuff, I never saw anything like that. I'm not saying they're being dishonest. I'm sure that stuff happened. But if that was the impetus or the inspiration behind this decision, it's kind of strange. If it was a matter of they needed to generate more capital because they've got some infrastructure changes and they want to make things better on the site, which it sounds like they do, awesome. Makes sense. But that kind of example that was given about, you know, selling something for $1 and charging that crazy fee, I personally never saw it. It was kind of a stretch, but that's neither here nor there. So you have Discogs now, no viable competition outside of eBay. You have, you know, a lot of different opinions of Discogs as a whole. Like I said at the beginning, I call it the best worst thing in the hobby today, and I'll kind of dissect that. The best part of it is literally that database. It's so valuable and invaluable that you can literally look up matrix numbers on the spot wherever you're shopping. You can also kind of keep track as your collection grows in size. You can keep track of not getting duplicates or doubles or things you already have, that kind of stuff. So to me, it's an essential piece of the toolkit. What I say about the worst part of the hobby is the accelerating price structure, and it takes a couple different views. One, I think we can all agree, if you collect vinyl records, prices just keep going up and up and up. Part of that is on new vinyl, the manufacturing costs allegedly continue to scale. Coming out of COVID, pent-up demand, there's a lot of global socioeconomic stuff. I mean, I'm not an economist, so I'm not going to get into that. So one is new vinyl prices continue to surge. I don't think they've pushed that price up. I think personally, I think they're testing the elasticity and the appetite for people's pricing aptitude, if you will, how much they're willing to pay for new vinyl. And I think they still haven't found that kind of bounce back point. That's what I call the elasticity of the pricing curve. But as it relates to Discogs, more importantly, it's on used vinyl. And somebody who really leans into collecting used vinyl like I do, this is like a kick in the junk because the prices just keep going up and up and up, driven in a lot of ways by what's happening on Discogs. And if you're familiar with Discogs, you know, part of what they do from a pricing end is they have like the last, I think it's 8 to 10 sold transactions of a particular title on site, and it'll tell you the median, the high, the low, all that kind of stuff. Now, sometimes there's a lot of noise in those numbers because they do have some fraud and some bad actors that kind of get into the site and kind of doctor those numbers, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But from a baseline perspective, you've got the last 8 to 10 transactions, let's call it. And so a lot of that information is fueling sellers in terms of what they should charge for these records, these used records. A lot of it extends down to the independent store level. A lot of it extends to eBay stores, Discogs stores, online stores, people who have like a Shopify account or like private, you know, sellers, auctions, et cetera, et cetera. So I call it the Discogsification of the hobby. And lately, and I would say in the last, 3 years, it's infected, and I use that word intentionally, it's infected the local record shows, because the local record show used to be the place that you could still find some deals. Obviously, rare titles are going to be more expensive. Makes complete sense. Harder to find, harder to source. Rare titles, limited release, availability being the primary driver of a lot of the pricing. Makes sense. But now, and I'm sure you guys who are listening to this have seen this, the cheap records aren't cheap anymore. What once was a $2 to $5 record is now a $5 to $10 record or a $10 to $15 record. What once was something that was a steady Eddie $20 record is now a $25 to $40 record. And why is this? Because of Discogs. Because people, and I've seen it and I'm guilty of it, will be in a record show, in a record shop, and pull out that phone, and there's what they are kind of weighing against. Is that a good price? They're looking at a title. Is it in range? Does it make sense? Is it worth spending money on? It's all the things we think about when we're making those transactions. And sellers, to their credit, have picked up on that. And this extends well past the record show. I mean, if you go to a flea market, I've seen this at swap meets. I mean, the Discogs pricing is everywhere. It's truly, that's why I used that word before, infected. It's truly infected the hobby because the pricing is literally Discog-centric. So is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I don't know. I think only the consumer can decide, right? But I think as long as people are still buying the records in one way or another, I think that's a good thing. So the marketplace thing, I kind of have mixed feelings on. Personally, I have not bought a record from Discogs in a couple months, and I have really scaled back my volume of purchases on Discogs for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, for me, my state was one of the last ones that held out for paying like sales tax through Discogs. So once that kind of fell through and is eradicated, and now you're adding, let's call it 10% on top of these purchase prices, that was very buying prohibitive, purchasing prohibitive. So that was one reason for me in my own unique situation that I wasn't buying as much on Discogs. The selling fee really didn't apply because I was buying now as a seller, because I do sell on Discogs. I literally just sold a record the other day that I had listed for years. I'm not even making that up. It just kind of sold, and I was happy it sold. But there's that 9%. And I think right now in my quote-unquote Discogs shop, my flat selling fee, I only sell U.S. domestic only. I think it's at $5.50. Well, that was about the median price or charge, depending on where the parcel was going for most of my shipments. But as I just said, I just sold a record the other day, and my shipping charge just into postage, that's not including my materials, my time, my labels, was more than $5.50. Now, do I adjust that? I mean, these are the things that a lot of sellers on Discount Tide have to argue and kind of weigh. Do you make it free shipping and then build that into your overall selling price? I mean, those are kind of the things that can be frustrating about using this platform to sell, just as much as it is to buy, because if I can get a record somewhere else cheaper, let's call it a new record. Let's go back to new records for a second. Amazon. Why would I buy a brand new title from a Discogs seller, even if they're a private seller or a store or whatever their business may be, if I can get it from Amazon? I think that's, I mean, dollars are dollars. And while it's nice and novel to support independent record stores, and I try to do that at all times, but the reality is that if I can save $5 to $10 on a single transaction and invest that in a different way in my collection, more times than not in a used title at the independent record store, I'll do it. So a lot of noise, a lot of hands in the donut mix, if you will, about the current state of Discogs from that end. Now, I said before, one thing that I'm still waiting on a definitive answer and some kind of true direction was a lot of the fraudulent activity that goes on in Discogs. Namely, and you're going to see that coming up, Record Store Day is coming up in, 2 months from the time that this is being recorded. And you're going to see right after Record Store, hell, on Record Store Day itself, there will be a lot of new sellers popping up, selling Record Store Day titles that they don't have, for crazy cheap prices. They get people who don't know what they're doing. Here's a good example. A lot of Taylor Swift fans have been going to Record Store Days on Record Store Day to buy Record Store Day specific titles of late. There was the Pond Sessions. There was the 7-inch she did like 2 years ago. So you have a lot of people new to the hobby, inexperienced of the ways of Discogs, who want these titles. They couldn't get them for whatever reason at their local stores. eBay is, you know, they don't feel like dealing with that. So it's probably a simple Google search, bebop boobop, and it lands them to Discogs and that listing and then all these different sellers. And so somebody who doesn't even probably have an account on Discogs creates one just for the sole intent and purpose of buying one of these Taylor Swift titles for themselves, their child, their partner, whoever. And there's a ton of fraud. You had a lot of opportunistic people and bad actors who would either create new accounts to sell these titles, which they didn't have, or would find dormant accounts that hadn't been active in a while and somehow would hack into them and pretend to be like a shell front of somebody who had a lot of sales history and experience and selling things they didn't have. Now, watching both of these interviews of late, the Steve Westman one and the G.I. Sanders one, they just kind of danced around that. They acknowledged it happens, and they had talked about a couple different measures they've taken in place about some vetting, about new sellers, and so forth. And I'm glad that there was progress on that front. But dollars to donuts, folks, I'm telling you, watch Record Store Day this year, and that's going to be the true test. That's the true stress test, because you're going to see a lot of it. Now, there's no Taylor Swift title that I'm, off the top of my mind, thinking they have for Record Store Day, so kind of skirt that example off to the side. But they're still going to be highly coveted titles that people are going to be after, not going to be able to get them at their locals, and they're going to turn online and Google, take you right to Discogs. So keep in mind and keep an eye on that, because this will be a good stress test to see what kind of progress has been made there. Because I still don't think they've made as much progress as they think they have. And that's, again, from somebody who's on the site, in the app, multiple times a day, especially when I'm out, record shows, record fairs, etc. Now, another piece that's often not talked about a lot as a buyer and a seller is the customer support piece. And like I said before, you know, I've noticed Discogs has a now hiring little kind of flash on their landing page sometimes. And I'll just morbid curiosity, check it out. And it's usually for IT development, back office type stuff. Very, very rarely have I ever seen like a customer service type job. Now, I don't know the exact layout of the organization and what the customer support end looks like. I can just speak to my experience as a buyer and a seller. The customer support is like terrible. There's not even a kind way to say it. It's just not good, from inadequate and slow response times to vague answers. Now they've created like an FAQ effect that they want you to kind of source a lot of answers yourself in any kind of areas of dispute or confusion or misrepresentation, those sorts of things. But it's very lazy. I mean, I encourage you, if you've got some time, check it out yourself. Go on their website, check out some of that stuff. While there's a lot of words, there's not a lot of substance and not a lot of action behind them. And more importantly, if you think about it as being a customer, take Discogs off the table for a second. Say it's eBay. If you have a problem with something you buy on eBay, or a seller, or if you're a buyer, eBay support usually will give you some kind of answer in a day, maybe within hours, and that'll start that exchange. Discogs has no kind of vehicle like that at all. I've never, ever, in the few instances I've had directly as a buyer and a seller that had to get customer support, Discogs support involved, have I ever gotten a direct response that was adequate or that was personal? I mean, we are customers of, I mean, we are not only buying things in the marketplace, we're also providing a lot of the information for the database. Again, 750 million records in the global collection. It's a lot of information. That's a lot of data. So the fact that the customer experience, the customer service experience is so piss poor for something at a company that's been online and active for 20 years, it's a giant head scratcher, especially in lieu of the aforementioned price increase. I mean, what's going on there? What, I don't know. Again, not trying to be critical, but these are just observations that I've noticed as being a user, an active user on the platform. And again, inspired by what I'll call this goodwill tour, what Tom at HireRant District called, you know, using the Vinyl community as a marketing tool. Because if you take Tom's perspective and what Tom is talking about in this video, and I'll leave a link to Tom's video in the show notes, he's not wrong. I mean, it's interesting timing, and you know, he's kind of definitely, now I disagree with him in the sense that, you know, I don't think that Steve Westman and G.I. Sanders were necessarily giving them fluff interviews. Steve's a very good interviewer, and G.I. is starting up this Discogs Insider part of his channel, which I wish him luck with. But I feel that, like I said before, there wasn't a lot of real like substance to what they're talking about. They're giving a lot of facts and a lot of updates, and you know, we want things to be better. They're saying all the right things, but where was that? You know, like if they were debuting a new feature on the site, or if they're promoting a seller's corner or something or other, some kind of new enhancement, a new improvement, awesome. It would make sense, this PR type of tour that they're undergoing. But why are they out talking at this time? That's what I've been scratching my head about. And that's, I think, kind of watching Tom's video that kind of got me thinking. It's like, okay, why are we seeing these guys like almost back to back? Westman's interview was like 2 weeks ago, and G.I. Sanders was just over a week ago. Curious timing. So all in all, and that's been, I mean, we're closing on a half hour, so I appreciate you staying with me on this kind of meandering conversation. I'm just kind of scratching my head, because I think if you're like me, I think Discogs could be so much more and should be so much more, especially if you think about price increase, if you think about the scope of users who are literally providing the photos, the information. Now, one thing I did pick up from these interviews, and I think that's very valid, and I think it is something that they have invested in from the user experience, as I heard them say that they had somebody who actually checks listings and an authenticity of a lot of the information, a fact checker, if you will. Because I think they said that this individual was like one of their highest contributors of information from the user end. And so they just straight up hired them, which I thought was, I mean, makes a lot of sense. So that's great. So progress is being made, but is it being made commensurate to the scale that the hobby is growing? Case in point, I just saw this news recently. A John Coltrane Blue Train record, 1957 original, sold for $12,600 recently. Now, hang on, that's not a typo. $12,600. Wow. And as somebody who I would like to have that record, I saw that record at one of my favorite online stores, in any store that has an online presence, for $1,000 a couple months ago. And I considered it. I mean, that's a lot of money. I considered it. But in no way, shape, or form did I think. And it's not like this record was sealed. It was a opened record. $12,600. So is the hobby now going up another level and expanding and really leaning into the speculative part, the investing part? Well, I mean, based on $12,600 paid for a used record, it sure seems that way. But conveniently enough, that record was not sold on Discogs. It was actually sold on eBay, and obviously that goes into the auction site kind of thing. But to kind of put a bow on this, the competition piece, and I said this before about NASDAQ falling by the wayside, you know, you've got Whatnot out there, and I think Whatnot is an alternative to Discogs from the buying and selling lens, but I don't think it has the longevity that Discogs could potentially offer with a couple of tweaks and an investment, a double down in diligent, dedicated customer support into customer issues, customer concerns, customer inquiries, just as much as an investment and a true concerted effort. Not to say they're not trying, but just a real, like something you can see, less fake accounts, less fraudulent activity, less people opening up dormant accounts and doing fraudulent stuff there. If there was some kind of email they wanted to send to us with that kind of information, I'd love it. I'd love it. I get emails from Discogs about my updated want list all the time, and it's not really actionable to me. I think I turned it off recently because it was just essentially spam to me. But the days of Discogs dominating the landscape as a record collector and in this hobby is nowhere near ending. In fact, I think it's only going to go larger and become even more influential in the hobby. Does that mean that the escalating prices, I mean, again, $12,600. I mean, holy smokes. You heard that stat I said earlier about the most expensive release in a Discogs collection is the infamous Black Album from Prince, averaging almost $28,000 for a title. Wow. So the prices aren't going down, folks. The demand does not appear to be going down, nor does Discogs' influence on the hobby seem to be eroding or evaporating in any way. So my open call out by doing this kind of talk, sharing my thoughts and opinions and all that kind of stuff, is just an open challenge to the folks at Discogs to make things better, communicate better, explain what the world tour that's kind of going on is about. Is it truly a marketing maneuver like Tom was kind of theorizing? Is it just an awareness thing? Like, hey, we want you to know Discogs is on the road to improvement and we're doing all this cool stuff. And tell us more about that. Would love to hear that because, again, I'm on this app almost every day. Now, the last thing I'll say before I wrap this up is the app itself. Probably the biggest bugaboo about the complete Discogs experience. The app has made leaps and bounds in the last several years. I got to get that off the top. But the fact it crashes so much, there's got to be something that can be done. Like, if this is where the money is going, fantastic. But where is the updated app? Where is the foolproof app? Where is the app that doesn't lag or doesn't crash? I mean, there's nothing more frustrating than you literally have an open record. You're checking the matrix. You've got your phone in one hand, the record in the other, and then it crashes. And you've got to do it all over again. So the user experience has got to improve, and the reliability of the app has got to improve. So not that they care about what one collector, one podcast person has to say about their product, but that would go a long way in making me want to get, for lack of a better word, a Discogs t-shirt and shake my Discogs pom-pom. Like, please, the app has got to be, I'd say foolproof, but I don't have this problem on the eBay app, if I'm being completely candid. Never crashes. I mean, it's crash. I shouldn't say never crashes, but reliability is paramount. Customer support is consistent, and I know what I'm getting. It's a proven vehicle. Now they have a longer runway. They've been in business longer, but not a ton longer than Discogs has. So again, you're talking a $1 billion corporation versus, you know, I don't know what Discogs' annual revenue is, but I'm sure it's unfortunately dwarfed by the size of eBay, because eBay sells a lot of different stuff. And they have a longer history, and they're international and all stuff. I mean, Discogs is international too. I should probably walk that one back. But anyway, buddies, just something that was on my mind. Discogs, state of Discogs. Why are we getting the world tour? All these kind of things got me thinking, and I wanted to share some of my thoughts. Be curious your thoughts. Hit me up on Instagram. I love communicating with you guys. There's always, when these episodes come out, I always do a social media post. Anywhere you can find me, Concert Buddy, B-U-D-D-I-E. I always misspell it on purpose. That's branding, hashtag branding, folks. But appreciate you listening. Again, trying something a little bit different, top of mind. Discogs, what's going on? Is something afoot? And again, shout out to Steve Westman and G.I. Sanders both. I enjoyed both of those chats. I listened to them start to finish, and I thought that they were held and conducted very well. Steve asked, and Steve in particular asked a lot of questions I kind of had on the top of my mind, and also was quick to show a lot of data points. I think there's somebody from the Discogs end who had helped him with that. So that was enjoyable entertainment for me. And like I said, Tom, High Rant District, I'll leave a link to his video because he makes some good salient points too. I think it's always good to hear multiple perspectives on some of these issues because it helps form a better, more concise opinion on the topic at hand. But buddies, thanks for listening. Appreciate you. Vinyl Community Podcast, over and out.
And that was another trip around the turntable. Thanks for listening to Vinyl Community Podcasts.